This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Well, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, as we get ready for the American League Championship Series. Yankees and Astros could get rained out today, but the Nationals won the NLCS. They are going to the World Series for the first time in franchise history. We've been talking about the improbable run without Bryce Harper being 12 games below 500. But it just goes to show you in baseball that if you work some things out, you catch a break, everything starts falling for you, you can make things happen. I didn't think the Nationals could get by the Dodgers, and they did, and I certainly didn't think they would dominate the St. Louis Cardinals like they did. And it is too bad from a standpoint of, if you're rooting for a competitive series, that you didn't get that at all. That the St. Louis Cardinals, for as much bravado as they had going into this series, I mean, they were ready. They were wanting to give everybody hell who wanted to put them in their place. They didn't show up. They didn't show up at all. They made errors in the first inning, and the Nationals scored 7 runs, and it was over after that. And what you see in a game like that, where it's a deciding game for one team, or maybe it's even a game 7, when it gets out of hand early, is there is just this large anticipation that is starting to brew, and it's starting to develop, and it starts to build up, and it comes to a crescendo. And then before you know it, it's the ninth inning, and then there's one out, then there's two outs, and there's three outs, and then there's the eruption. Waited for this pretty much since the series looked like it was going to be dominated by Washington in game 3. Game 4 just was the afterthought, was the icing on the cake for a series that Washington controlled from the very beginning. Rarely will you find in baseball a 4-game sweep in which one team not only dominated like the Nationals did, but never trailed in all of the games. Never once in all of the innings that were played with the Nationals behind in this series. Props to them, but also too bad for the St. Louis Cardinals that they couldn't muster enough against the great pitching of Washington. And again, no fault on the Cards for struggling against those guys. But in the postseason, you've got to show up, you've got to hit, and you've got to score runs. And the Nationals prevented the Cardinals from doing that in a way that was historic. And that's what last night was amazing. It was just an impressive performance. We'll see how impressive they are against either Houston or the Yankees in the World Series.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, if the boys want to fight, you better let them. Thin Lizzy, a first-time nominee for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that was announced for 2020.
It really is kind of shocking.
This is...
I mean, don't they do it like...
I feel like I'm being pranked.
Don't they do it like how, you know, like Major League Baseball does? It's like, as soon as they're eligible, just put them on the nomination
list. Just get them
list.
In. Yeah.
Like, what's the criteria just to get nominated?
I know. I don't know any of... I like having fun with it, so I like not knowing the process, because
right.
I feel like if I knew the process, I'd be like, okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
I like complaining about this.
Yeah, the only thing I've seen where the process, in order to get nominated, is that your first commercial album had to have been released, I think, 20 or 25 years ago.
Wow.
This is another one. Time. I'm pretty certain these guys have been around a lot longer than 20, 25 years.
I don't think Thin Lizzy is hanging around anymore.
No, I don't believe they are.
God, that's amazing.
I mean,
really
some
amazing.
Of them are probably still alive.
By the way, Michael on Twitter, there should be an entire separate wing for the Seattle sound, the greatest music period of all time. It really was very good.
Okay.
It really was different.
I see you, Michael.
Yeah. I mean, that was the transition. You know what the Seattle sound was, which was weird? It made all of us who liked all of the 80s hair bands look dumb. We loved...
Idiots.
Poison, Motley Crue, right? Like, we loved White Lion, woo! And, you know, just all of these hair bands. And then here comes Nirvana. Here comes the Seattle sound later. And all of a sudden, we're like, yeah, okay, that was
Who still
sad.
Had hair. They just didn't hairspray it up. They just let it come down.
I mean, Poison looked like women.
Yes.
And some of them looked like good-looking women. I mean, it was really nuts. They were really dolled up.
It is kind of funny. You think about it. It's like all of a sudden Seattle came through. It's like, oh, that was stupid.
Yeah, right.
No, we should never have liked them. I don't like them.
This is really good music. Like, this is profound and deep.
Yeah. There's more poetry involved instead of, you know, nothing but a good time.
Nothing but a good time, right? Every rose has its thorn. Yeah, okay. How many cliches can we throw in a song?
Yeah. Smell like teen spirit. What does that mean?
Wow. What does that mean? That's deep. I think Black Hole Sun? It sings to me. It's speaking to me in my state of mind right now. Like that kind of thing. Right? It made us go.
I remember I was so into it because I had the boots. I had the flannel tied around my waist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, wearing shorts on a nice SoCal day. I know I looked the part. Had the hair, like long hair parted down the middle. I literally looked like Joey Lawrence during that time, I think.
I was dating this girl at the time. She was working at this restaurant, and I remember calling her up after her shift to tell her Kurt Cobain died. And she, you know, because obviously it was before Wi-Fi and everything. And she cried and had to call me back.
Oh, I remember being...
she had to call me back. She goes, I have to call you back. I can't take this. She goes, are you serious? And I go, yeah. She goes, oh my God. She started breaking down and crying.
Yeah, I remember being bummed, but I remember walking around school because that was my senior year in high school, I believe, or junior year in high school. And just mobs of people just all of a sudden just walking around like depressed.
Oh, depressed.
Yeah. And it was one of those things. Cause I don't even know how, like you heard word of mouth because, you know, you didn't get an alert on your phone. You didn't have a phone.
No.
Somebody had to tell somebody, and then it just kind of trickled through. Like,
yeah,
it was as if somebody was coming back from a doctor's appointment or a dentist's appointment, saying, "You know what I just heard on the radio?" And then,
that's exactly right.
That was a weird day.
It was a weird day. That's true. You know what? On this date in history, you know what today is?
No.
Today is Aaron Boone's walk-off home run for the Yankees in 2003.
Oh, you mean Aaron Bleep Boone?
Yeah, Boone. Yeah.
So I should bring him some success today.
Yeah, it should, right? Hopefully. It should
probably
be his day today. This was the moment where I think Red Sox fans said, we're never going to win the World Series.
Yeah.
And then they did the next year. They did the next year.
No, but that's a good call. And when that happens, when it's Aaron Boone that does it.
Right. Aaron Boone hits a walk-off home run in Game 7 in the 11th inning. And you're a Red Sox fan. You've been waiting 85 years at the time or whatever it was. You go, we're never going to win this thing ever. My lifetime will never include a championship. Those stupid Yankees
are going again. True.
Yeah. Some of them in the next 365 days or whatever it was, 380 days or whatever it was.
You imagine, okay, not to be morbid or anything, but you live through that, then you're watching the next season, the next playoffs, and maybe you pass away after the Yankees go up 3-0.
Right, right, sure.
What if you died like that day or the next day?
Right,
and didn't get to see the
outcome.
God, that would suck.
So Aaron Boone hits a home run, and then the Red Sox win the World Series the next year in dramatic fashion. They beat the Cardinals in 4 games after coming back and winning in 7 games against the Yankees. The Joe Buck was on the call of that Aaron Boone game. He really is America's sportscaster, isn't he?
He is.
I mean, that was a long time ago. It was 16 years ago.
Yeah, Joe Buck... I guess the only issue I have with Joe Buck is that I would love for him to get hyped sometime.
Every now and then.
You know, like when an amazing play happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, because all the greats, I mean, they get a little hyped. You know, it's not showing favoritism towards a team. It's just, oh, my God, I can't believe I saw that play happen.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what helped this game in 2003? It was the person that really helped the Yankees in this game was Grady Little, the Red Sox manager.
Who?
If I remember correctly, Pedro Martinez was pitching and was starting to struggle a little bit. He started losing a little bit of his accuracy, and Grady Little gave up like a double to Jeter or Bernie Williams or whatnot. Little went out to the mound and he left Martinez in the game. And then Hideki Matsui and Jorge Posada drove in runs. They scored 3 runs in the bottom of the 8th inning to send the game into extra innings in the first place. And Grady Little, knowing that his pitcher, like when you go out to the mound as a manager in the postseason and your pitcher goes, don't worry, Skip, I got it. You go, nope, you don't. Bye. I'm not. No, You don't go, oh, really? You do? Because I just noticed that you weren't, but you're better than me. So why don't you go out and go pitch? All players want to compete. No pitcher goes, guy, please take me out of this. Skip, I have got to get back to that dugout. I cannot do this anymore. No, all pitchers want to compete be in games.
Well, I mean, it's just like the Astros in the last series where, you know, Verlander goes, I want the ball.
Right. I want the ball.
He was like, oh, okay.
All right. But as a manager, you're supposed to be the one who goes, no.
Yeah, no. Let's stick to the rotation. Let's stick to the plan.
I got Alan Embry. I'll bring him in, and you go back. You've given us everything you've had. You're done. And he can fight me. You can fight me all you want, but this is my call. Thank you for everything. You're done. But instead, left Martinez in there, and then Yankee scored 3 runs and set up Aaron Boone's walk-off. I wonder, because I didn't grow up a Red Sox fan, I wonder, and I'd love to talk to like some of my real friends, like after, does the Aaron Boone home run in Game 7 in 03 plus the fact that you beat the Yankees in 7 games the next year, does it all make that World Series even more sweet? Because it was all the amazing low of realizing, oh God, and then the incredible high comes with it the following year, right? Like, it's not like the Red Sox didn't make the playoffs or anything and then went to the World Series and won. They went to the playoffs, had a very good chance of beating the Yankees. Aaron Boone ends that, and then the next year they come back from a 3-0 deficit and then win the World Series. It's like that collection just goes, and we ended the curse by look at what happened in like a year. Look what we were able to do in a year. So it is Aaron Boone Day, but apparently God wants to wait a day because it's going to pour in New York City all day today. So.
And that will be the end of the Yankees.
Spoiling the moment.
They needed today to take it to 2-2, but because it's going to rain all day, God doesn't want the Yankees to win.
So who has an advantage with the rain today? Or is it just even keel? Or is it just even money?
See, I think the Astros have the advantage because they have a deeper rotation.
Yeah, they do have a deeper rotation.
Obviously they have the best starting rotation in baseball right now. Maybe the Nationals are a close second. But their bullpen is much better.
Yeah, and it's going to be all hands on deck for Game 7 after you go through Greinke, Verlander, and Cole for Games 4, 5, and 6 if it does rain out today. Today's supposed to be, I don't know, whoever, Wade Miley, Jose Urquidy. I don't know who the Astros are going to start.
Right.
Chad Green is supposed to be the opener for the Yankees. They're going through that same thing. But if it rains out today, you can reset your rotation.
But see, here's the thing for me. The Yankees, all season long, they've been known for their big power hits, their home runs. I don't really know how many routine base hits do they get.
That's a good question.
Because
what
I know
that batting average overall.
Yeah, for me, the Astros, I know they excel at that. They're not huge home run hitters. They have guys who hit home runs, but their rub is that they know how to get on base, and then they know how to move on base.
Right, right.
And they know how to move those guys around on base. And that's where I think the advantage comes in when you start getting to this part of the season where, you know, pitchers' arms are getting tired. I mean, Gerrit Cole, I'm not saying he looked pedestrian yesterday, but he didn't look like he did the last 2 games.
But imagine if you could have a situation in Game 7 where you could start Zach Greinke on 3 days rest for Game 7 and then bring in Verlander on 2 days rest for an inning or two. I don't know if you would bring in Gerrit Cole, but you could. For an inning?
I would say you would save Gerrit Cole. Well,
after he pitched in game, after he started game 6.
Yeah, you don't bring in Gerrit Cole. I think you would save Gerrit Cole for the game 1 of the World Series.
Right, right.
In that scenario, if there is a game 7.
But you'd have to unload as much as you possibly could if you go game 7.
Yeah, but I mean, different stuff. I mean, Wade.
The Yankees. I got no idea. I'll be honest with you. I have no idea how this would affect the Yankees because I'm like Hideki Matsui and
Severino. Severino didn't even look that great.
Yeah, Severino. I'll give him props on this though. Did you think he was going to get taken out of the first inning?
Yes.
Because at one moment I was ready to tweet. This is 36 pitches in the first inning.
Yeah. They were working them.
I was making the prediction that he was going to get pulled in the second inning, but he hung in there. He went 4 1/3, which is what Boone would have wanted. He would have taken it, given his limited work during the regular season. But that was, I was like, he is getting rocked. Like, he couldn't find the plate. The Astros were chasing him on pitches, just making him pitch. And I thought, 36 pitches after the first inning, this is Boone's nightmare scenario. Now he's got to go to the bullpen again.
Yeah.
Early in this game.
Well, I mean, both sides. I mean, you know, Garrett Cole threw more pitches in the first inning. I thought he was going to as well.
Well, Cole, I said this earlier, Cole struggled and yet ends up with a line of seven scoreless.
Yeah.
Because the Yankees couldn't get the hits when they were appropriate to supposed to get them. Like, I don't know, when guys are on base and you can drive them home.
Well, it was almost like he got in there and then the crowd rattled him a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, it was oh my God, I'm pitching in the ALCS at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, and he did give up two singles and then he got the outs and
he started settling down and looking more like Garrett Cole. That's why I was like, I'm not saying his performance yesterday was pedestrian, but it wasn't lights out Garrett Cole like we've seen the last two starts.
Without question.
But still, I mean, seven strikeouts, seven inning scoreless. I mean, that's what you ask for.
All right. Well, coming up, Tim Donaghy's going to join us, the former NBA referee involved in the betting scandal about 10 or 12 years ago. But coming up next, the Cleveland Browns may have another problem on their hands. And this one I'm really looking forward to seeing play out next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we are saluting the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees that have been released. I don't know who this is.
Nine Inch Nails,
okay.
Song is Head Like a Hole.
Wow. Now, they're not a first-time nominee.
No, they're not a first-time nominee. And they've had other, they have bigger, not bigger hits, but comparable hits. They did Johnny Cash's Hurt.
That's right.
That's a little too slow for the morning.
Did they do Johnny Cash's Hurt, or did Johnny Cash do their Hurt?
Oh.
That's a good question.
That's another, you know, is it Tom Brady or Bill Belichick responsible?
Very true.
Who knows?
One out of four batteries will fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstar Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has a Superstar battery for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Oh, I can't wait for this story to play its way out. I hope it doesn't disappear into one of those legalistic things. The Cleveland Browns are being sued by DJ Eric Smith. If you remember this in week one, he was identified as the fan that was pouring beer on a Tennessee Titans player.
For shame.
It was actually Malcolm Butler, who took an interception for a touchdown. And there was a Browns fan that poured beer on top of his head.
Eric Smith.
Yeah.
They have video evidence, Tony.
So they identified this guy, and they contacted him and said, you can never again attend a Cleveland Browns game. Banned for life. There was only a slight problem. He said, I wasn't even at the stadium.
Wait, what?
I was DJing at a wedding, and I have people to prove it. So now he's suing the Browns. But here's the angle of the story that I don't like. The Browns never publicly identified him. They just notified him. But still, the story got out that they did. So he's seeking damages. And I hope he wins. I really hope he wins.
But he's going to.
I think he's going to. I think the Browns have got to settle this out of court.
They got to get on top of it immediately and be like, okay, you know what? In addition to getting your tickets back, how about a luxury suite?
He's seeking $25,000 in damages. I'm sorry. That's another lawsuit that the Browns had. I apologize. He's seeking just damages in general.
Yeah, I think what I read was damages in general plus like a public apology.
Yeah, they want a public apology, and he should get a public apology. Listen, you gotta be 100% sure when you do something like that.
Yeah.
If you're in these businesses, and they weren't, and they didn't do their investigation. They just wanted to scream to the high heavens that this was not going to. They wanted to punish before they knew who they were punishing.
Yeah, you know
they wanted the appearance of punishing.
You know what they did? They looked at the videotape. They looked at the section and said, "All right, who had tickets in that section?
Right.
Let's just go back. They found out like so and so should be sitting right there in that seat. Perfect. We got
That's
him.
Great. Yep. Absolutely.
Without ever. Probably looking up a profile photo of the guy.
And so I hope he wins because this would be a really fun story.
If he can prove that he was DJing a wedding and that he was nowhere near Brown Stadium at that time, like you know, the Browns, I mean, they have security cameras all over the place. You'd be able to find him. I mean, he's definitely going to win.
Well, this is what happens sometimes when you have a player that does something wrong or is accused of doing something wrong, and everybody is screaming, "What's the NFL going to do?" or "What's the NBA going to do?" And the NBA goes, "Well, we're going to look into it." And they're like, "That's not good enough. You need to." And they're like, "Well, we don't really know if this is true, but no, you have to suspend him until they scream." And then the league goes, "Oh gosh, stop, calm down." I'm sure that people were pressuring the Cleveland Browns to do something. Like, this is something you can't have. You can't have this happen at your stadium. And the Browns were like, okay, let's find the guy. Let's quickly find the guy and ban him. And then and then he was like, "I wasn't there." And they're like, "Oh, oops, sorry." But pouring beer on players, this is what's going on in the ALCS. Josh Reddick said that the Yankee fans were throwing debris. By the way, that's not a new story. I could have said that story a number of times in the history of Yankee baseball over the last couple of playoff appearances. Josh Reddick is not unveiling something brand new about Yankee fans in the outfield. He said that Yankee fans were tossing water bottles, baseball, and other objects onto the field. That is something you can't have. I mean, the Yankees need to beef up their security on this. But they've been doing it forever. I mean, it's absolutely wrong. And I feel like if you're out there trying to concentrate on baseball and somebody's throwing a baseball at you or throwing something at you, I'd be really upset, especially being that close to a rabid fan base that's been pretty much drinking all afternoon and having a good time. I'd lose my mind. But the Cleveland Brown situation is terrible because they should have really made some phone calls, dug deeper into this, took their time, made sure they got the right guy, but they didn't. And you know what? They should pay this guy. They should give him money because the story did get out.
They made luxury suites.
Yeah, totally.
Don't give him voucher for a free, you know, basket of nachos or something.
No. Baker Mayfield should go to his house with the dustbuster and clean up.
Or like maybe, I'm going to assume that's Baker Mayfield's wife or girlfriend in that commercial.
I think it is. It is his wife.
Maybe they go over and they check his electricity.
That's good.
Uncover what that mysterious light switch does.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Does it work now?
You know, I just moved into a new house. I have two of them.
You have two switches that don't
work?
No,
I have two switches. I don't know what they are.
Oh, you don't know what they do.
I should probably go around and just plug a lamp on each one.
Sure.
But, like, this one room has a ton of outlets. I'm like, oh, that's annoying. I'm not going to do that.
I have a weird switch where the up is off and the down is on.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know how to fix that or if it is fixable. I'm not an electrician, so forgive me.
It is. You got to unscrew the panel or screw the little plate, get in there, and just kind of flip the switch around.
Oh, sure. Easy for you to say. You're not getting electrocuted.
Oh, no. It's a shocking ordeal.
All right. It is. Very good.
What you do is when you get that exposed, you stick a screwdriver right into the heart of it.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Yeah. I can't wait. My hair stand on end.
Exactly.
Yeah, very good.
Don't have to do your hair for a week.
Michael on Twitter, the Red Sox fan, says about Pedro Martinez in 2003, it was a 110 pitch count. Hitters had a 125 batting average against Pedro under 110, but over 300 when it was over. And yes, it does eliminate all the pain and suffering. What happened since? Of course, yeah, that's got to be. Aaron Boone hitting a home run.
110 pitch count.
On this date in 2003, he was on a 110 pitch count. Grady Little goes to the mound. Pedro goes, "I still got it. Okay, I'll trust you." And then the Yankees score three.
That's just amazing to hear a 110 pitch count. I'm sorry.
I know, right?
I mean, now, like, you know, I mean, we're not that far removed, but if a pitcher gets to 100 pitches, like, oh, they're pulling him soon.
Oh, we're freaking out. Are you kidding?
He gets to 90, it's like, oh, my God, he's really up there.
Because we think if he throws 110 pitches, his arm is going to fall off.
It's going to fall right off.
Right on the field. And you're going to have to get a surgeon, and you're going to have to tie it back up again, and that's too much hassle.
It's a bloody situation.
You got to get an anesthesiologist. It's a mess. Because if he goes that one more pitch, there it is. It's just going to lie as like a bloody stump on the ground, and you got to take care of it. I mean, seriously, we freak out as baseball freaks out over pitch counts. Are you kidding?
And then we stand in awe when we read about Cy Young threw 200 pitches in a game once.
Was anybody counting Sandy Koufax's pitches back in the day?
I mean, were they even counting pitches?
Bob Feller's pitches, were they even counting them? I don't know. Tim Donahue joins us next, the former NBA ref involved in the league's betting scandal. He's got a new movie out. We'll talk about it next.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, if you remember the NBA betting scandal from many years ago, Tim Donahue was the referee at the centerpiece of it all and one of the scrutinized people that was involved in that scandal. He joins us now on SB Nation Radio. Got a new movie coming out, Inside Game. The story of the scandal, including his involvement and his life around it. And he joins us here on, again, SB Nation AM. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
You know, Tim, I don't usually start off with a question of how are you doing, but I am curious. It has been a number of years. How are you doing?
Actually doing great. I had, very fortunate situations where I had great family and friends and support, and I've been able to get back, in a position where I'm happy and healthy.
This movie that's coming out, and it's going to open on November 1st, your involvement in it in terms of creative consultant, it's your story, but how much involvement did you have in telling the story within the movie?
Really, it's Tommy Martino's version of events written and directed by his cousin, Paulie Martino, who's a venture capitalist. So I really didn't have much to do with it. They did read my book and add some things from my book into the movie. So really, it's their version of events, and I'm just a long nail to help with marketing and be involved in it, and I'm happy to do so.
All right, so give us an idea of this whole scandal back in the day, and when you were involved in it, at the heaviest of when you were involved, did you ever stop and go, I'm in too deep, I'm not getting out of this, and I'm eventually getting caught?
I was hoping I didn't get caught, and I definitely thought that I was in too deep, and that's when I was hoping just to give Batista and the people associated with organized crime, picks for the next 3 months and then hopefully be done with it. And that's all depicted in the movie where at the Marriott in Philadelphia, Batista comes to me with Tommy Martino and basically says that, he wants me to continue to give him the picks that I was given to a buddy of mine earlier in the whole scheme.
You had it all, man. You were young, six-figure salary, NBA ref, touring the country, hobnobbing with NBA stars. I'm assuming an off-season where you could do some other things. What was going on at the time that made you say, I could risk it all by doing this? What's the pull?
Bottom line is a lot of poor decisions. I got really hooked on gambling, and it just shows it all in the movie Inside Game, how choices that we make can really not only affect yourself, but affect the people you love the most, and that's your family. So when you see the movie, you're going to see that there's a lot of poor choices, not only made by me, but Tommy Martino and Jimmy Batista. And it really was a downfall that really affected all our families tremendously.
When you got notified that things were going south, that this was over, and what was going through your head? Two, did you think that this was criminal? Did you think you were in trouble with the law, or did you think you were just going to lose your job and be publicly shamed?
Honestly, I thought I was just going to lose my job because the United States attorney called up the attorney that I hired, and he said to him, Tim Donaghy's better off coming to us and just losing his job. If he doesn't come to us, not only is he going to lose his job, but he's going to go to jail for a long, long time. And with that threat, I got on a plane the next day and flew to New York and basically confessed everything to them because I knew I was in a lot of trouble. I had four daughters, and the last thing that I needed was to go to jail for 7, 8, 9 years because I Googled the Boston College scandal and saw that all those guys went to jail. So, I was really in a tough situation, so I thought it was in my best interest to confess, and that's all in the movie, and it's portrayed really well from that perspective.
Inside Game, again, opens nationwide on November 1st. Tim Donahue joins us, former NBA ref, involved in the betting scandal. About 10 years ago, maybe 11 years ago? Mid
2000s? 2008. 2007, yeah. 2008 is when it all went down. So it's every time I think that it's behind me, either a major article pops up on ESPN or Paulie Martino knocks on my door and tells me he wants to do a movie about the whole scandal. So every time I think it's behind me, something else pops up.
Is it true that after this whole thing went down, the NBA said, listen, we got a whole new department. We are building a whole new department on figuring this stuff out, how this happened in the first place, and hopefully it'll never happen again?
You know, it's a situation where, you know, it happened. I don't think they educated the referees back then the way they hopefully do now. It happened before I was on board. There was a Colombo crime family captain named Michael Francisi that said he had three NBA referees on his personal payroll in the mid-1990s, and none of them were named Tim Donaghy. So it wasn't just me. It was other people that were doing it also. But hopefully at this point it's well behind the NBA, and they're moving forward in a productive manner.
Is it can it happen today, given the scrutiny of it? Can it happen with all of the eyes on the sport, with all of the analytics, with all of the numbers now being processed by computers and people who know mathematics? Can it still happen today? I'm sure it can, but can it happen as blatantly as it happened?
I think it can, because I think when you look at the situation, the rules in the NBA aren't enforced as they're written in the rule book, and there's so much subjectivity that you know, within these playoff series, when a team's down in the series, the league office tells referees to concentrate on certain things, and it puts the team at an advantage or disadvantage. And with that, that information can leak out, and I think it changed the line by 3, 4, sometimes even 5 or 6 points. And, you know, gamblers are going to jump all over that type of thing.
You don't have to answer this, but I do want to ask, do you watch NBA games now? And when you do, does your antenna go up?
Definitely. I mean, I still watch NBA games now, and it's a situation where I do see certain things happen. Certain teams put advantages or disadvantages, and certain players, you know, allowed to take 3, 4, and 5 steps at times and start a layup from half court, and you just shake your head and you wonder why.
You had an accusation against the NBA that they wanted to extend a playoff series to 7 games. Is that still in 2019? Is that still something you believe that happened or did occur?
Absolutely. I think when you talk about the bottom line and what the NBA needs to do to make money, it's certainly going to take place today. I think they're going to program and train the referees in these playoff series. And it's portrayed a lot in the movie Inside Game, to where, you know, the winning percentage that I had was outrageous because a lot of things the NBA league office did.
As gambling becomes more mainstream and more states are legalizing this, there's going to be a lot more eyes on the sport and a lot more attention to these kind of lines and how these games are actually played out and finalized. Is that good for the integrity of the game to have that, or is there now a bad wiggle room that these leagues are getting involved in?
You know, I think there's always better to have more eyes on certain things. I think it's always better to educate different people on the pitfalls and the downfalls of being involved in something that I did. You just hope that it doesn't happen again. I think where it's going to happen is you're going to have a college kid that's not going to go to the NBA or not going to go to the NFL, and someone's going to approach him and offer him $20,000-$25,000 to maybe win a game but not cover the spread. I think that's when the next scandal is going to happen.
Tim, how easy was this to do? I mean, did you ever worry that the call from your boss was going to be, we really need to talk, you need to come to New York now?
You know, it was a matter of, you know, refereeing with people like Dick Bavetta, who would say he was the NBA's inside guy, go-to guy, and he was put on certain games to make sure certain things happened, and he was allowed to do whatever he wanted to do. I refereed a lot of games with him, and basically at lunchtime I knew who was going to win the game and who was going to cover the spread, and unfortunately I took that information and I passed it along to other people.
When you were doing this, did you have any coaches say, Tim, I don't get what you're seeing. I don't get what's going on. This is the 5th or 6th game that you've ref for me, and these numbers are out of whack?
You know, again, I wasn't out fixing games. I was going out calling what the NBA wanted to call. I wasn't putting Shaquille O'Neal or Kobe Bryant, you know, to the bench in order for a bet to win. And in the movie, it's portrayed really well by the FBI agents as they go over each and every game that I refereed and said every call was legitimate that I was making. And it was just a situation where I was rated as one of the top referees in the league, and I wasn't going out fixing the games. I was just, you know, making assumptions based on what the league wanted called.
So if you weren't doing that, then how were you being so successful? Did you just know how a game would flow better than anybody that was watching the NBA?
Not only how a game flowed better, when the league office said, you know, Yao Ming's walking in the post, or Kevin Garnett setting illegal screens, I knew the crew was going to go out and concentrate on those things, and that team was going to be in an advantage or disadvantage. Or there were even times where certain referees target certain players like Allen Iverson, and called palming violations on him, you know, when that wasn't called during the year. So it was always within the rules. If there was a focus point that needed to be focused on, I knew that the team was going to be put at an advantage or a disadvantage.
Right, side question off of this subject, but more about officiating in games. If a Greg Popovich or a Pat Riley or anybody else had come to you and said, let me tell you something, man, he is throwing elbows every time, or he's walking every time he has the ball, do you ignore that, or does that sit in your mind so that you watch that throughout the game?
No, you definitely, it definitely comes to your attention, and then you go in at halftime and you look at the film and see if you missed something and go out the second half and make sure you call it. There's always something when a coach or player says something to you, it always puts your antenna up, and you definitely go out and see if they're right, because you don't want to miss something as flagrant as an elbow like that.
Inside Game is the movie. Again, November 1st is when it is out. Tim Donahue is our guest on SB Nation AM. And I thank you so much for your time. One final question in terms of, I asked you, my first question was, how you doing? Tim, how are you perceived? Do people talk kind of are really interested in your background? Do you have a hard time with old relationships? What is that like for you now when people know this scandal and your involvement in it?
I've been very fortunate that we live in a very forgiving country, and people understand that we all make mistakes. My mistake just happened to be played out for the entire world to see, and it was an unfortunate situation, but I think people realize that I'm remorseful for what I did. I wish I wasn't involved. I wish I could turn back time, but unfortunately I can't. And with the movie Inside Game coming out, I'm hoping this is the last time it's in the public eye, and I can put this whole thing behind me.
I'm fascinated by this movie. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Tim, thank you so much for your time, shedding a little light on this, and giving us an insight of what your life is like today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You got it. Tim Donahue, former ref in the NBA scandal. A lot to unpack when we come back. It is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees. Is this Depeche Mode?
No.
Is this...
You're not going to get it. Don't even try.
Is it?
Don't pretend like you
okay.
know this band.
I don't know this band. Who is it?
We talked about them last year around this time. I'm
Did
surprised
we?
That they didn't get in.
All right. Who was it?
This is Kraftwerk.
Is it Kraftwerk?
With their song, Autobahn.
This is this is another attempt to get them in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
They're nominated once again. I mean, listen to this. This is pure gold.
Pure gold.
Pure gold, Jerry.
This hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, I told you a lot to unpack with the Tim Donahue interview. Again, movie Inside Game. I'm going to see it. I think it's fascinating. I'm just into that kind of thing. But he again, is denying he fixed games.
What's he apologizing for then?
What is his involvement in the scandal was giving inside information to gamblers on games he was refereeing, but he also bet on games, but he didn't fix them. How in the world would you not subconsciously throw a couple of fouls in the mix? That's how you listen. An official in football can call holding and extend drives, but in the end, they can't give you points.
Yeah,
right?
I was confused because he said, by lunchtime he knew who was going to win the game.
Really? I find that really hard to believe.
Well, what do you mean you knew who was going to win the game?
Right.
The game hadn't even played yet.
Unless you knew the trend that you could alter. Like, okay, so a football referee, is back to what I was saying, a football referee can call holding and they can extend drives, but they can't give you points. They can put you in a position to get points, but they can't give you points. A referee in basketball can give you points. They can send you to the free throw line over and over again to give you points. So in a close game, you absolutely can influence the outcome of the game.
And one other thing, can we give it up for, you know, the ultimate name dropper ever?
Dick Bavetta?
No, what Tim Donahue just then. When he was going, he's like, you know, and you're out there, and you know, Allen Iverson's on the field.
Oh, that's right, Allen Iverson, yeah.
Kevin Garnett, he was just throwing name left and right.
That's what I was saying to him earlier.
It's bizarre that you were just standing next to that guy.
Yeah, that's what I was telling him earlier. You had everything. I mean, he was a rookie NBA official. He's 27. Mm-hmm. That's a six-figure job. So he bought a house and a membership at a country club. He had a big house on the golf course that was a private country club in his late 20s. Like, you gave all of that up to get more money? Now, reports were that he was given $2,000 per game. Okay, that's good, but it's not the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, that was being bet on the games in which he was influencing. But he was willing to throw that all away. Again, that couldn't have gone on forever. Eventually, somebody was going to stop this.
Yeah. All it takes is one person to get ousted by the group, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm taking you all down.
That's what happened to him. He didn't talk about it, but the story was that he was on a golf course in Sarasota on the first tee when he got a phone call. And one of the guys in the group that he was with said, it's all over. I just spoke to the U.S. Attorney General or whatever it was, and I told him everything. And he said he went numb, and he started freaking out. It's like, yeah, I would too. But you knew that day was coming. I mean, really, how long did he think it was? He said, in 3 months, I was going to be done. You think they were going to let you be done? Yeah. You realize all these people are making millions.
We've watched enough movies to know you're not done they say you're done.
Yeah, you're not done. You don't get to walk out of there 3 months later and go, I'm not going to be doing this anymore. Oh, yes, you will be doing this. They have the goods on you. You've been doing it before. And your livelihood and your job is at risk because it's in their hands. You're not done. You were never going to be done.